Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. Fireball Hot Take Friday, ESPN 102.5. The game, Preds off today. Back at it, back-to-back matinees Saturday and Sunday. And I'm going to the game tomorrow. I've said this. Look, I'm going. I hope they win. But, man, was I bummed out after yesterday's loss. I mean, I was one of the people that this time last week was kind of in favor of the Elliott Friedman report that they're thinking about tearing down, and everybody's on the table except Yossi, Ellis, and Rene. And I honestly thought that Ellis should be on the table. I don't know why Ellis isn't on the table if everybody else is. And I thought that, you know, maybe they need to go to Pekka and say, hey, what do you want to do? And kind of, if you want to be traded, you know, to get a shot at, you know, get another crack at a cup, do it. If not, we'll keep you here, and you and mom and baby can do whatever. But they said, Pekka said on Monday, David Poile said on Tuesday, you know, give this team a chance, you know, give this team some time. And then I said, okay, I need four in a row. I need two against Detroit. I need two against Columbus. That'd be four in a row this week. That'd be five in a row in total. That would probably put you in third or fourth place in the division, somewhere around there, which would give you a chance to, you know, maybe make some noise, get some confidence back, all of those things. And, you know, then they looked the way they did last night. Ryan Porth joins us, host of Preds Insiders. Ryan, are you in agreement with me that last night's game was more than just one game? Or do you think I'm reading into one loss? And in pro sports, anybody, you know, the Predators, when they won the President's Trophy, had some nights that they wish they had had back that season. It's pro sports. But do you look at it like that, like it's one game? Or do you look at it like I do, which is like, you know, we've been waiting. How much longer can we wait?
Yes. That's how I'd respond. I think there's a little bit of both. You know, last night it felt like a little bit of a, you know, coming to your senses about this team. That's what it felt like in that third period, when the Red Wings, you know, made it 3-2, then 4-2, and then added the empty netter to make it 5-2. Not that, you know, at least me personally didn't feel like there were issues with this team that they really need to figure out there in the first 10-15 games. But the fact that they've now played Detroit twice, and you've seen them go toe-to-toe with Detroit twice, and they look like almost even teams, you know, throughout most of those four games, sans the first two periods of that Saturday night clunker at home against the Red Wings. It brings you to reality of where this team is right now. And that reality just is not good with this team. Honestly, this team is very hard to watch offensively. You know, I look at other teams around the league, and goals just come so easy, whether it's at 5-on-5, whether it's on the power play. And it's even with some teams that may not have a lot of talent. Some teams have less talent than the Nashville Predators, and or equal talent, and excel a lot better offensively. And are easier on the eyes offensively than this Predators team. And last night, that third period, it felt like, yep, this team is what we think it is, but in a not so good way.
Why is this team so inept offensively? I mean, I know that they probably reduced the amount of talent they had on offense when they let a guy like Craig Smith go, although, you know, Craig Smith drove me nuts. You know, they let those kind of players go.
You had a lot of players drive you nuts.
That is true. And probably right now for good reason. But they let a guy, Craig Smith go. They bring in some guys, you know, Cunning and Holla. And I know that Holla scored last night. But they bring in those guys. And yet, I watch. I mean, the offense is awful. I mean, it is non-existent on offense. And it's not like Detroit is just locking everybody down every night.
Well, up until this past Saturday's game against Columbus, when the offense did look a lot better than it had in previous weeks, I didn't feel like they had much chemistry at all offensively. We've even heard Matt Duchesne talk about this on Robbie and Rex Road, where, you know, it just kind of feels like, you know, Ryan Ellis has said it too, where it feels like they get to the offensive zone and they're not entirely on the same page with where their other guy's going to be. They don't really trust each other to be in the right spot. Dan Hynote came on Robbie and Rex Road and said that too, that they're still building trust from player to player in the offensive zone. It looks completely disorganized at times. And sometimes they're doing the dump and chase when it feels like they should just carry the puck into the zone, or vice versa. It just feels completely discombobulated. And I think a big part of that is the fact that John Hines is – this team got so used to – and these players on this roster got so used to the way that Peter Laviolette wanted to run the system, which was having the defense carry the puck through the zone and into the offensive zone and create offense, which is why Roman Josi has been such a great offensive player and put up a lot of points in the last few years, because he would go from coast to coast with the puck on a stick and create offense. Well, we're not seeing as much of that here this season, and even later last season. Ryan Ellis, same thing. And I think there's just this acclimation period that they're going through with this different philosophy offensively. And it's been a while now that Hines has been coach. I mean, he's been head coach for over half a season, still not a long time, but you see a lot of teams make a coaching change and instantly things get better. And the offense has clearly gotten worse since John Hines took over.
And I look at Hines and I think it's hard to – I feel bad for him because of the situation he was placed in of, okay, you're taking over for Peter Laviolette, who 3 years ago had this team in the cup final, won the President's Trophy 2 years ago. Then a global pandemic shuts down the sport for 5 months. Then you get back at it, you lose. Then you change kind of not the core of your roster, but everything else. And now you have a shortened season. Oh, and Tampa is in your division now. And you play them early, go get them.
Right.
And then there's a part of me that's John Hines was legitimately hired to make the team last year that we thought was underperforming. Hines was hired to make them perform. And if anything, since he's been hired, especially offensively, but in general, they have performed worse than they were when he took over.
Well, I think all of that is legit, but you also have to look at the roster construction for this season as well. I mean, I said this a lot during the winter on Preds Insiders of who's going to score outside of the Jofa line? Who's going to score? And a big part of that, even when they signed Mikael Granlund and Erik Haula, was, all right, well, if Philip Forsberg and Victor Arvidsson and Ryan Johansson have a good season, what if one of them gets hurt? And there was a stark contrast between the offense, which was pretty well average with Ryan Johansson in the lineup pre-injury. When he came out of the lineup, that offense was almost unbearable to watch. And a big part of that is you take Johansson out of the depth chart and you're plugging in players in positions where they shouldn't be, whether it's, you know, Rocco Grimaldi in the top six or Luke Cunnan as your top line center. It then puts a lot of strain on guys like Forsberg and Arvidsson and Duchesne to perform, because there aren't many other guys on that roster up and down that depth chart offensively that are natural goal scorers. I mean, there's really only a couple of them on this roster. So I think it's a number of different factors for why we're watching what we're watching with this Preds offense.
I just feel like, you know, sports is about a blame game. And we live in a city where Mike Mularkey took the team to the playoffs and got fired. And I'm looking at what we're seeing right now. And I just, as I said earlier today, if I own the team, I'm not sure I could continue in this direction after the year's over. You know, as far as what they're doing and the route they're going. And yet, when you talk to them, it's like, no, give it some more time, give it some more time, give it some more time. And I just wonder, like, what's fair in terms of really waiting on it?
I have the same thought of what is a fair time, especially with John Hines, because he's so new. What is a fair time to be able to judge John Hines as a coach. You know, he was thrown into the lion's den in the middle of the season last year. A lot of coaches do get fired. A lot of new coaches come in and have a lot of success. But it felt like John Hines almost had to be like Dr. Phil for a lot of late last season and a lot of the pandemic to correct whatever funk that this team was in with some of their struggles, you know, before Peter Laviolette got fired. And he had a shorter training camp, but all the teams had a shorter training camp, but he had a lot of new faces come in. So I struggle with the same thing, Jared, of knowing when is the right time for us to be able to say, you know, John Hines is blank.
I guess I would say this, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here. In this sport, would you agree with me hockey is a fire the coach sport? Where it feels like that is a card that is played very early in hockey, maybe compared to the other sports.
Just look at the Canadians. The Canadians started like gangbusters. They looked like one of the best offensive teams in the league. They go through 2 weeks where things don't go right and the offensive numbers go down and they fire Claude Julien. And it's now that has to do with a lot of the pressure that's on Montreal to win this season and this new window that they've created. And some of the troubles that they went through with, you know, Julian's system and the talent that is on the roster. But we see it all the time in this sport. Pittsburgh, St. Louis, Los Angeles. I mean, those three teams in the last, what, 10 years, 12 years, have all won a Stanley Cup after firing the coach midseason.
And I'm just saying, I feel like Hines is in a tough spot because, again, he hasn't been here very long and it's all been segmented and and Terry Crisp did go to bat for him, you know, last week, I think multiple times, which does mean something to me. But, like, if you really had hopes for this season, like the way that this sport is played, the way this sport is managed, wouldn't Hines be pretty close right now if you were literally like if the Predators ownership had said to David Poile, you have to win this season at all costs, don't you think Hines would be pretty close to out the door right now? I mean, I don't think that's the direction that they're going to go this year. I think Hines is coaching through the whole season. And maybe he coaches next year or at least the beginning of next year. I don't know. But I'm looking at how other teams run their operations when they think that they should be winning right now. And then again, I balance it with what's fair to John Hines.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it would be unfair for the ownership group to, or anybody, to look at the roster that was constructed and how it changed between last season in the bubble against Arizona and between opening night this season and realistically think that this team could have been a Stanley Cup contender or a slam dunk playoff team going into the season. We all knew that this team was probably, in reality, a bubble team at best. That the ceiling was probably third place in the division, but the floor was probably what they are right now, and that's, you know, being sixth, seventh place in the Central Division.
Did you really think that was the floor?
Yeah.
I guess I never really thought about it. I went into the year with no expectation. This, to me, was the year of the answer, which... You know, can these core guys, are they really core guys? Like, is Arvidsson really a core guy? Is Johansson really a core guy that I want to build my team around? You know, is Hines the coach I want to build my team around? Is Poile, you know, still Hall of Fame caliber? Is, like, this was that, you know, is Fabro the future? Is that, like, those are kind of the things that I went into this year with, which was, you know, kind of an open mind. Let's see the young players play. Let's see the old players play. Let's see the coach. And I never really put down a figure as to what I expected them to do, but arguably worst team in the league or losing to the worst team in the league, yeah, you know, that was not what I was expecting.
Well,
this group.
Well, this is the product that we're watching right now is worse than I thought the floor would be. Standings wise, I thought this was certainly possible if Florida was going to have a surprise season, which they are, and they look to be a legit team. Chicago has improved. And look, when when you're not a good team, this is kind of one thing that I was throwing out to some of my buddies last night who were texting me outraged about the results of losing to Detroit and kind of saying a lot of the same things that I've heard you say too, of you got to beat Detroit. If you want to be in the playoffs, you have to handle your business against Detroit. My response has been, well, if you're not that good of a team, like the Predators have shown they aren't that good of a team so far this season, you're probably not going to win all the games that you, quote, should win. And I go back to last night where, again, it kind of felt like reality hit us all in the face with this team if it hadn't already.
Okay, let's get to your texts and your calls. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025, Ryan Porth with us. Your thoughts on the Predators. It's all on the table. Everything. 615-737-1025. We'll get to those coming up next. We're live on a Fireball Hot Take Friday from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. We are delivered by TriStar Moving. Let me tell you about my friends at TriStar Moving. I hate moving. Everybody hates moving. Not if you get TriStar Moving. At TriStar Moving, you'll get five-star service throughout the entire process. That's why their motto is TriStar Moving with five-star service. Everything when they came to my home was absolutely taken care of and taken care of perfectly. They covered the floors, the banisters, the railings, the front door thresholds, the door itself. They wrapped and protected all of the furniture so that it was rocking and rolling when it showed up here. And they put all of my TVs in protective boxes. They even offer state-of-the-art brand new storage facilities in case you need a safe place for all of your belongings. They do it all. The owners, Garrett and Robert, they're true Nashvillians, and they want to help this community any way you can. So if you are looking to move, give my friends at TriStar Moving a call, 615-640-1219, or visit their website at nashvillemoving.org/radio. They'll give you 5% off your entire move. That's nashvillemoving.org/radio. Tell them Jared Stillman sent you. My official movers, TriStar Moving.
You guys have talked a lot recently about playing more to the identity that you want. Did you still see some of that? Were you getting away from that a little bit? How did you see that shake out?
Yeah, a little bit of both, I would say. I thought we got away a little bit. We especially in the second, I thought we turned over too many pucks, and they're a pretty fast team. They had a lot of counter chances, a lot of odd man rushes. So I thought we got away from it a bit, just getting pucks deep and playing their end. So we got to get back to playing that way.
That was Roman Josi after last night's game. Ryan Porth, Preds Insiders, is with us. Ryan, do you kind of feel like we hear the same things after all these press conferences? And I don't know if this is just a, hey, when you lose, you're going to hear the same things, just like Mike Vrabel. Mike, you guys didn't get a first down in the second half. Why? Well, we got to be better in everything. We got to be better in all three phases. We got, you know.
Got to play it better, got to coach better.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to hear the same things a lot, but it does feel like, you know, it's like, oh, this game we just weren't consistent enough. Well, that's been like a problem for 3 years. I mean, I wonder, like, what's the expectation on changing that a little bit?
Well, I think this is normal for teams that just don't have consistent success, if I'm being completely honest. And it goes for all sports. You brought up Mike Vrabel as an example for the Titans. How many times did we hear Taylor Lewan after the games where he took a stupid penalty saying, I need to be better.
True.
I can't take penalties. And then 5 weeks later, he would take a boneheaded personal foul penalty and, you know, put his team in a bad spot. We hear this a lot in sports. And I honestly don't know how that will ever change, honestly, because they're going to be asked the same questions. You know, it's not like they're going to throw teammates under the bus, or, you know, not everyone is the most media savvy. You know, not everybody is PK Subban or, you know, anybody like that. So I just think that is what it is, as tough as that might be for a fan to hear, you know, players from your favorite team saying the same things, saying they need to correct the same things, and the results not backing that up.
Texture to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says the Preds are an NHL team playing with AHL-caliber players other than 5 forwards, 3 defensemen, and 1 goalie. They have to put a better product on the ice, and the special teams coach has to go. They have been worse since he has shown up. I think he's talking about Dan Lambert in saying that he's got to go. I got to be honest with you. I don't think the roster is as bad as everybody makes it out to be. And I know the roster's bad. But I don't think it's as bad as everybody makes it out to be. You know how I know it's not that bad? Because when these Elliot Friedman types go on the midday show, they talk about all the players on the team that we can't stand who everybody would trade for. So if somebody's going to take Colton Sissons on their team, that means he's not an AHL player.
Well, you bring up something interesting because look at a lot of the players that David Poile did acquire in the last 3 to 4 years where they had success at other stops. It's not like Kyle Turris was a bad center in Ottawa. Kyle Turris was a productive center in Ottawa and for whatever reason got progressively worse in a Nashville Predators uniform. Wayne Simmonds was a 30-goal scorer with the Flyers. Now, he had been showing signs of regressing before that trade, but he offered almost nothing down the stretch. I believe that was the 2019 season. You look at some of these other guys. Ryan Hartman had some layer of success in Chicago that he never tapped.
No. He was terrible.
Well, he was not as productive here as what he was in Chicago. And you can say the same thing about Mikael Granlund here as he was in Minnesota. It has been a big mystery to me. And also, you can now throw Eric Halla's name onto that list where he scored, what, 28, 29 goals in the expansion season for Vegas, and he scored his first goal of the season last night. Like, that has been a pretty big mystery as to why that's happening in the last 2 or 3 years when they've been acquiring all these players that have a track record of success at other stops, and then they come here and they underwhelm compared to what they did at previous stops.
Texter says, Poile put this team together. He's the one that needs to be fired. Last night's game wasn't that bad offensively, as Detroit is pretty good defensively. Our goaltending cost us the game last night, but it doesn't speak to the bigger picture.
There is truth to the fact that Detroit is better defensively than a lot of teams would be with their record. That is one thing that I think a lot of people misunderstand with the Detroit Red Wings. They are pretty good defensively. They just don't have any offense. I mean, Bobby Ryan and Sam Gagne, two players that were good 10 years ago, are their best players, most notable forwards outside of Dylan Larkin. You know? Like, they just don't have much offense. And last night, Pekka-Rinne, as good as he's been in a handful of games lately, his last two or the two losses against Detroit in the last couple weeks, he has not looked good.
No. Texter says, we can talk about how the adjustment to Hines hasn't worked out and how Hines hasn't had enough time, but let's be honest, when the Preds made the switch from Barry to Peter, it did not seem to take them very long as they started the next year off Peter's first year as one of the top teams in the league.
They were one of the top teams in the league for like 75% of the season.
So I guess to the Texter's point, why are we giving an excuse to Hines? You know, with the pandemic and the roster change and the this and the that and the that. I mean, that is a fair point that the Texter brings up.
Sure. I mean, you see it with a number of teams where there's a change and it instantly clicks. Maybe I would assume with the expectations that were bestowed upon that team last season that David Poile thought that making the change from Laviolette to Hines mid-season could spark something to the extent of them becoming a playoff team and get into the top three of the Central Division after what was a very topsy-turvy first half of the season, and it just didn't happen.
You think if they could do it again, they would have let go of Laviolette when they did?
That's tough because you hear things about Peter Laviolette afterwards that are like, okay, he was to a point losing some of that room. How much of that is on the players? How much of that is on Lavi? And we all know that Laviolette, as good of a coach as he is, he's had a shelf life at every single stop. Every single one.
So I have a theory on this as far as Laviolette's concerned with a lot of things. But like going back to Turris, Floyd and I always talk off air about Brady. And I think one of the things with Brady, you know, a sixth-round pick becomes the greatest quarterback of all time. First off, if you go back to that Brady 6 documentary, Brady's parents thought he was going to go in like the second or third round. So there were people that were saying, hey, second or third round for Brady. Then he ends up going in the sixth round. I think, one, he was underdrafted. Like, he was probably a better prospect coming out of college than he was drafted. Two, I think that he didn't have the right opportunity. They didn't see enough of him because they were playing all these other guys. And three, he made himself better. So it wasn't just one thing that allowed Tom Brady to go from being 199 to the best player ever. I think like with Kyle Turris, and I'm using him as an example, but I think one thing is they traded for him and immediately extended him to a contract sight unseen. I'm not sure he has the personality to go with Laviolette. I'm not sure he plays the kind of game to go with Laviolette. You know, somebody told me that he's kind of like a younger Mike Fisher, but then I look at him in his own end and he's nothing like Mike Fisher. And I can see that really wearing on Peter Laviolette. I mean, Peter wants guys who play hard all the time, play tough, you know, those kind of things. And I think I know Peter well enough to know that if Peter's got a problem, he's not going to back down on his problem. And I'm sure he's probably going to hammer it over and over and over and over again. I think there probably is something to the idea of, you know, if they could do it over again, maybe they still probably would have let Peter go, given the circumstances. I just think they wouldn't have jumped right away to hire a new coach. I think they would have taken their time to kind of evaluate what the players needed, what they felt like the roster needed, you know, and maybe would have called up Carl Taylor to coach the team on an interim basis and then kind of pieced it together to find out what they needed at coach, as opposed to just jumping from one guy to the next guy right away. And I'm not sure that they have really ever gotten over that weird, like, period where Hines was coaching a team that he almost knew nothing about.
It did feel a little awkward with him coming in as the full-time guy right away. You see it a lot of times where a coach will come in, he's the interim, and then they take the interim tag off of him. Just see Craig Berube in St. Mm-hmm. Louis, where he was the interim coach when they won the Cup, and then obviously there was no way they were, you know, going to have a different coach to start the next season. I mean, maybe the Turris situation, I feel like, is almost the start of all of this, right? Mm-hmm. Like the Turris trade, everything was all fine and dandy. They went to the Stanley Cup final. They make a couple moves in that offseason. They signed Scott Hartnell. They signed Nick Bonino. And we had doubts at the time that Nick Bonino could be the number two center on a team that wants to win a Stanley Cup. And within a month into the season, they pulled the trigger on this blockbuster, bring in Kyle Turris, had instant success. But that trade has kind of resulted in some dominoes of, all right, Turris didn't work out. He was more of a detriment to the team as his tenure went along. And because he wasn't as productive as he was at the start of his tenure in a Prez uniform, you go out and sign Matt Duchene. Well, you sign Matt Duchene while you still have Kyle Turris on the roster. Those three guys, Ryan Johansson, Matt Duchene, and Kyle Turris, none of them should be playing on the third or fourth line. None of them. Because they are not tailor-made to be playing in those kind of situations.
Right.
So you put Kyle Turris on the fourth line, or you're putting Kyle Turris at wing, or you're putting Kyle Turris at center on the second line and then putting Duchene at wing. And then Duchene's like, okay, well, you paid me $8 million to come in and be center. Why am I going to the wing? Not saying that he thought that way, but you can, you know, maybe think that that could have gone through his mind. And it always, in the last half of Turris's tenure here, it always felt like a square peg in a round hole, always. And I felt like that was perhaps bringing some of the, you know, causing this team to, the fact that he was such a dead weight on the depth chart, causing this team a little bit, or a factor in the fact that they were playing under their potential.
I think my biggest problem with the Turris thing was, I think that was the first move where David just overreached. You know, that trade was that, like, at the time, I remember at the time being like, I don't really know about this guy. Like, everyone's getting excited about it. I don't know. And then, like, that was an overreach. A first-round pick for Ryan Hartman, I thought was ridiculous at the time. I got so widely criticized because everybody was like, oh, it's a good trade. They're going for it. I'm like, what? Like, Ryan Hartman? And that was a reach. And then, you know, the whole Duchene signing, like, that was kind of a reach. Like, you talked about Hartnell and Bonino. Like, those are good moves. Those were, like, moves at the value you got them for what you needed. Like, that was good fit, good player, good money, like good. And then once they got into tourists, the tourist business, they started overpaying for everything.
Well,
and now it's like the credit card bill has come due.
Sure. Well, these moves have kind of been indicative of something that I brought up on Preds Insiders earlier this week, which was I feel like what we're watching in part is the fact that they have never been able to go out and draft and develop star forwards. Victor Arvidsson is probably the best forward that David Poile has drafted, right? I mean, Arvidsson holds he holds the single season goal record for the Preds, which is 33, which is another issue in this conversation because they've never had a 40-goal scorer, the only team in the NHL to never have a 40-goal scorer.
See, and what you just said to me, I know, you know, like what you just said to me that Arvidsson is the best forward ever drafted by David Poile in 22 years of doing this, like, that's a pretty revealing thesis statement.
I mean, I would challenge anybody who disagrees to find me a better productive forward that he has drafted for this Predators team. And because you haven't drafted those forwards and developed any stars, you're trying to go out and chase them. So you trade Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson. So you trade all these assets for Kyle Turris. So you trade PK Subban's salary because you want to sign Matt Duchene because Turris didn't come here and pan out. You trade all these picks for Ryan Hartman or, you know, big guys in front of the net because Austin Watson couldn't become that player. So you go out and get Wayne Simmonds and you get Brian Boyle and, you know, Simmonds doesn't work out. Like, it just feels like this never-ending search for these impact forwards because you can't draft your own. And a lot of that is because they've never drafted high enough to be able to get the Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby. But you see all the time players in the middle to late first round see David Pastrnak as players that aren't top five picks, but they pan out as star forwards.
Ryan Porth, Preds Insiders. Porth, appreciate you.
Absolutely.
We'll get your phones on all of this. 615-737-1025. We'll do that next on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. You know those guys are proud supporters of the Nashville Predators. Through thick and thin, they love the Preds. Hiller is offering special February promotions. Call today to schedule. They're offering a great financing deal on HVAC replacements. So from now until the end of the month, upgrade your HVAC system and pay no interest for 60 months. They're also offering their $99 HVAC tune-up for the rest of February. Regular maintenance helps you avoid costly repairs in the future, and while Hiller is at your home, they'll give you 50% off all standard repairs. They're also offering 10% off Tesla charger installations with a free electrical inspection, and new tankless water heaters for only $64 a month. They're taking every precaution possible when inside your home because they want everybody to be safe and healthy. Happy you'll be, or the service is free. You know I use Hiller at my home. That's Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Proud supporters of the Vols and the Preds. Hiller, call the Happy Face Truck today.
This many games into the season, I know it's shortened, and I know you guys haven't had the regular practice and everything else, but how much of this is bad luck versus just bad execution on your guys' part from your perspective?
I think it's more consistency, Paul. Consistency of doing the right things, you know, particularly of you know, the games we do it, and when we're doing it, we have success. But, you know, tonight was one of those games where we got away from it a bit at times, and, you know, we're a team that has to play consistently throughout a game, you know, to be able to have success. And it's not about luck. I think you make your luck by the way that you go about your business.
They need to make some luck, and they need to make some luck in a hurry. Phones we go, as promised. Bicycle Boy up next on Hines. Go ahead.
Hey, fellas. Listen, here's the thing. And Jared, this is one of the rare occasions where I agree with you. But listen, we hired Hines. What was his record in New Jersey? He was losing. Now he comes here. What's his record here? He's losing, and that's on Poile. So I'm with you, Jared. I think it's time that maybe they both need to go.
I appreciate your call. Let me say this about the Hines front. I mean, I like Hines. You know, I have respect for John Hines. That I will say. Like, I really, truly have respect for John Hines. And, Ian, I think you can back me up on this. If I didn't have respect for John Hines, I wouldn't say it. I wouldn't go out there and throw him under the bus, but I wouldn't get up on the soapbox and say, hey, I respect John Hines. And I do respect John Hines. The one thing that, like, I keep coming back to, like what Ryan said about Poyle, that the best forward Poyle has drafted in Predators in the 22 years he's been general manager is Victor Arvidsson. That's hard to, like, argue that. And then the Hines front. Like, I certainly don't think Hines is the problem. But I don't think Hines is without blame. And the offense right now is unbearable. I mean, just unbearable. And I wonder, you know, take the New Jersey record aside. Bill Belichick had a losing record in Cleveland, and then he went to New England. But take that aside. How did David get so hung up on Hines? Like, what made him fall in love with Hines? And don't tell me, well, Ray Shero and Tom Fitzgerald loved him in New Jersey. They fired him in New Jersey. Like, that needs to be kind of, you know, under the microscope of why'd you fall in love with this guy? I know it's unfair that the guy follows in the footsteps of Barry Trotz and Peter Laviolette, but yo, that's the bar for coaching hires around here. I mean, he's not following Ken Whisenhunt. Duvall is up next here on Stillman & Company on John Hines. What's up, Duvall?
Hey, guys, what's up? I was thinking about this last week, so I'm glad y'all bring it up. But, I mean, Peter Laviolette, we had a coach that had proven things. And John Hines has proven nothing. And honestly, I used to watch the Preds all the time. I can't even watch it anymore. I get on my app, I see the score, I see they're losing. I check out. It's ridiculous. We need to get rid of Hines. Honestly, I know Poyle has this reputation of being a great GM in the NHL, but the moves have just been, in my opinion, they've been awful, and we need to move on. This organization needs to blow up. It needs to start over. It's a disgrace.
Thank you for your call. Let me say this about the whole not watching, and I get it. Like, fans are gonna do whatever they want. I'm going to watch this team. I mean, I am. I'm going to the game tomorrow. And you know I'm down on it, right? I mean, I'm down. We should all be down. It's not good enough. But I wouldn't get on the not watching and checking the app. I'm not going to tell you what to do. You know, that's on you about watching it and everything else. But, I mean, it's just, it's tough because I know that if they tear it apart, to the texter's point, he's not going to be the only one who checks out and says, you know, I'll check it on my app or whatever. And then the second they get good again, it's like, my team. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of people like that. But I would just say this. If you tear it down, it's not getting better before it gets worse. Now, I'm of the belief that that's probably what they need a little bit, you know, to be able to pick high in the draft, to get some of these contracts off the cap so that when the right deal comes to them, they can make it. But at the same time, I would just say that, you know, it's going to get worse before it gets better. Right back to your phone, 615-737-1025, Fireball Hot Take Friday. We are to your phones next.
This team was able to bounce back twice and tie the game, but aside from just scoring more goals, what would you have wanted to see your club execute more on to stay in this game and have a chance to win?
Well, we talked throughout the game of, you know, making sure that we were a little bit loose on our line rush against, you know, gave up some chances that way and they got momentum on it. And then, you know, went right back to what we're doing offensively to be able to score more. You know, tonight was two perimeter. I think going into the third period, we only had three zone one grade A chances going into the third. And that was a big issue was, you know, just getting to the inside, getting to the net, screening the goalie. We wound up tying the game on a good face-off play. We get it through. We got a double screen, stack screen, and wind up putting the puck in the net. And we got away from it a bit tonight.
Got to stay focused. I promised phones it's a Fireball Hot Take Friday, which means it's your day. So let's get right to them. Bob, up next on Ryan Johansson. Thank you for calling. What's up, Bob?
Of the core players, do you think that they will try to move either Johansson or Duchesne? And my second question is, which one of the core do you think needs to be moved if in fact any of the core needs to be moved?
Thank you for the call. I'm going to lose the popularity contest here. Now, I would agree with everybody that I think you're probably just best off letting Seattle take Ryan Johansson if they can. Just to clear yourself of that salary and just, you know, move on. And I like Johansson. I do. And, I mean, you're a better team with him on it. The core guy that I feel like gets the easiest pass of anybody maybe in the entire city. Well, I shouldn't say that. But a guy who I think gets a big pass is Ryan Ellis. I mean, Kevin Byard has accomplished way more in his career for the Titans than Ryan Ellis has in his career, in my opinion, for the Predators. And Kevin Byard has a bad year. And we're like, what's wrong with Kevin Byard? Ryan Ellis has had two bad playoffs in a row. Last year, he had a decent regular season and was, I believe, non-existent. I can't even remember what he did in the playoffs. And this year, I mean, Ryan Ellis, like, oh, I heard that Elliot Friedman said that he's untouchable. I'm like, why? What does he give this team that is so untouchable? Ekholm is way better than Ellis. To me, they're not even close. Ekholm is faster. Ekholm is bigger. Ekholm is stronger and wouldn't let Jamie Benn just ragdoll him in the corner of a playoff game. I feel like Ekholm is a better offensive player. I mean, Hal Gill's like, oh, his shot's amazing. His shot misses the net 99% of the time. I mean, and Ryan Ellis is a good guy. I hate saying this stuff, but like, come on. So I just had to get on my soapbox about that. Mark, up next on John Hines. Thank you for calling. What's up, Mark?
Yeah, I'll make it quick here. That is, we had Peter DeBayer available, and we wound up picking John Hines. Peter DeBayer went out to Las Vegas, and then reinvigorated and kept the window open. While he's also shown that he was able to do it in New Jersey as well as with San Jose. So, I mean, just get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, about that. I mean, I guess I'm getting to the point now where I'm starting to feel bad for Hines, because it's like everything's being thrown, everything out there is being thrown against him. You know, John Hines didn't hire himself over Peter DeBayer. And, you know, that whole exit from San Jose was a little funky. And I was never a huge Peter DeBayer guy. I mean, the coach I love, and I know it's easy to love this coach right now, but I loved him when they played the Predators in the playoffs a couple years ago. I love Jared Bednar in Colorado. I love that guy. You know, there are coaches in this league I love. Peter DeBayer was never one of them. So if I'm going to be mad at Hines, it's not going to be that they hired him over Peter DeBayer. I know he's had some success. He's going to have more success. But that is not the number one reason. Now, I will say this. When Gerard Gallant got fired about 5 minutes after Hines got hired, I was sitting in the car like, it's like Hank Hill. But, I mean, I like him. You know, Gerard Gallant. Michael from Missouri, go ahead.
All right, so I don't want to be one of those Preds fans who's been there from the start who tries to use that as trying to say that they have more perspective than anybody else. But I have been there from the start, so I've seen the Preds as bad as they've ever been. They're not that bad, and they're bad, and they need a lot of work in the roster and whatever. But I think people saying that they need to be torn apart in the roster and then the organization need to think back about how bad those times were. And I'll take your comments off the air.
Thanks, Michael. I think they need to bring back. If you don't remember, and I'm not one of these people to be like, back in the old days, but if you don't remember the days of Sebastian Bortolo, I would just say that it's a little different. I do think this, though. I think they do need a real reset. I mean, there are, if this were a tree, there are some issues at the root, and you got to do something about that. Evan, quickly up next here on the Cup Run. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Evan.
Yeah, guys, Fireball hot take here. I think the Cup Run was the worst thing to happen to the Preds in recent history because it forced Poile to, as you're saying, reach on all these deals because he thought he had a window, and now the bill has come due for those reaches, and they did not work out because here we are sitting without a Stanley Cup. And had we not had that miraculous run, which I love the run, it was exciting, it was great, But at the end of the day, we got nothing out of it, and we are where we are today because of the tourist deal, which then led to everything that you just capped off.
So, Evan, I totally hear what you're saying, and I appreciate your call. I would just say this. The Cup run did not make David Poile trade a first-round pick for Ryan Hartman. That's all I'm going to say. We are out of here. ESPN Radio coming up next. Everybody have a very safe, everybody have a fun weekend. We will see you on Monday at 2 o'clock.